Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM. Big thanks to you, Johnny's, and to Afric. It's Tuesday, the 23rd of April, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, we'll talk with Duff versus Bradley with Keith Tracy, first rugby match in the Aviva for Irish legend Lindsay Peat, and we'll grill Ruby on the National Hunt season running.
And it's a busy week at the business end of the soccer season across the water, even if it's pretty much all done around Europe. We'll have more on that with Fergal Brennan. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552. We're on X at GameOn2FM, or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On on 2FM. Welcome along. Keith Tracy is with me in studio. Keith, how are you?
I'm great, Marie. How are you?
Good. I was listening to your commentary last night on the telly, the Shamrock Rovers and Shells game. Entertaining match?
Yeah, it was an entertaining game. Probably quite rare you say that about a nil-all draw, but it was really entertaining. The first half, Lopez crashes the crossbar with a lovely diving header, then Paddy Barrett goes up the other end, and Leon Poles produces a brilliant save, a world-class save in my opinion, just to tip it around the post. Paddy Barrett, there was a little issue, maybe he could have got sent off in the 35th minute, but there was some, probably about 40 yards in between him and the goalkeeper, so the referee was always going to take, I don't want to say the easy option, but he erred on the side of caution. And then in the second half, you know, the pitch at Talca Park, Damien Duffy spoke about it, it's mm-hmm. very bobbly, there's a lot of sand kicking up, and young Shane Farrell comes on and gets his two yellows straight away, and Duffy rolls the dice bringing Sean Boyd on, but he can't really be that attack minded, he's trying to play it out for a draw. And look, I think both teams would be happy. Shamrock Rovers, 4 wins in the last 5 before the game last night, and the only game they lost was to St. Pat's, and I did the commentary on that night as well, and for 45 minutes of that game Shamrock Rovers were absolutely unbelievable. So the signs that Rovers are really starting to click into gear, and like I said, I don't think Shelbourne would be too annoyed with the point, obviously having 10 men with 25 minutes to go.
So the 4-0 loss and a 0-0 draw with Shells, do you think you're becoming the Rovers bogey for commentary?
Possibly, yeah. I don't think the Pats fans will be mind if I am. They'll be on all the commentaries now for them.
Okay, we're going to hear now from the two managers, from Stephen Bradley and Damien Duff, speaking to Tony last night after the game.
Are you happy with a point, or considering that they were down to 10 men for the last 15 or so?
Yeah, I think we had some half chances, to be fair, but look, the players did extremely well when you consider the pitch is horrendous, you know, probably one of the worst I've seen. So the players did well to keep trying to play and keep trying to create. It's hard then, they drop back to the edge of the box, obviously with 10 men, and crowd the box. But there was a few half chances that maybe we could have been better at, but no, we take a point and we move on.
When you look at the last 3 games though, Sligo, Derry and Shelbourne, and you've come away with 7 points?
Oh yeah, well, we shouldn't be surprised, don't we? This team has been the best team in the country for 5 years, you know. It's not a fluke. You go into big games and go away from home and win games. That's what they do. They're down bodies, they just keep getting home, and they were very good tonight. We hit the crossbar, had half chances, and another night we win it.
A game with the passion you'd expect, I suppose, from a Dublin derby, a lot of yellow cards. Did you get one as well as Damien Duff?
Yeah, both of us got one, yeah. I'm not too sure why, to be honest with you. I thought they're having a huddle, our player goes over to listen to it, and the linesman comes over and pushes our players away, which is incredibly strange, you know. They're on the pitch, there's no reason to push them. I wasn't happy with that. He needs to keep his hands off our players, you know.
There was a nice moment, though, when you hugged Damien. Was that to stop him getting a second yellow?
I'm not sure what that was, to be honest. Yeah, we were just having a little bit of argy-bargy, but yeah, it was good.
I think we had the better chances. Loved our energy, our edge that we played with. We haven't seen it for 3 weeks, but I'm glad that we have our team back, and long may it continue.
Was that the response that you were looking for? Because clearly disappointing results in the last number.
Yeah, it's been, I guess, a bad few weeks, you know, results-wise. People feeling sorry for themselves, maybe in and around the club, in the dressing room, but I think people are soon to forget that this is a top-of-the-table clash against Shamrock Rovers, the best team in the country and best team that's been seen here in a long, long time. We haven't had a top of the table clash at Talca Park, Tony, in 18 years. I think everybody needs to, you know, appreciate how well the lads have done, including myself. Yeah, I'm hard on them, but here I do give them enough love, I think. But the club's in an amazing situation and a great game on Friday to bounce into. I got a yellow card for a poor decision from the officials, but here, I'll take it. I think I'm 23 behind Xavi still after seeing that stat last night. But yeah, passion. It's a Dublin derby. I absolutely thought it was a fascinating game.
How disappointed were you with Shane, though, to come on and then was it less than 10 minutes before he got a second yellow?
That's ridiculous. And I've no time for it. I've spoken some honest words with him up there. Is he letting me down? No, but he certainly let his teammates down and, you know, fans' favourite, supposedly. He's let the whole stadium down.
You could have lost top spot tonight, but you haven't. I mean, is this exactly where you expect it to be at this stage of the season?
Ah, listen, expected. I never look too far ahead. All I've looked at for the past few days is, yes, Rovers tonight, but also trying to hammer home the last 3 weeks to the guys. They haven't liked my honesty, but here, that's all they'll ever get off me. And we got a reaction tonight, a big, big reaction, I would say.
Keith, you get the feeling Damien Duff thinks Shane Farrell has an awful lot more to give.
Yeah, and I can see where Duffer's frustration has come from. A lot of people have said to me, is it not a little bit harsh? He's come on and he's put a fairly robust tackle in straight away on Honahan, gets a definite yellow card, and a couple of minutes later a ball bounces in the middle of the pitch and he goes for a ball that he can't go for. When you're on a yellow card, you just can't go for it, especially in a Dublin derby when, as I said, Damien Duff is bringing on Sean Boyd to try and roll the dice for the last 20 minutes or so. So I get why Damien Duff is annoyed, and you know, as a standalone incident, it probably is a little bit harsh, but I find it very hard to believe that Damien Duff has seen Shane Farrell come off the bench, get two yellow cards and decided that's it, I'm going to wallop him over in the media. Now I imagine that this is a totten up offence, and he said it, that he hasn't played with the intensity, he hasn't played with the right attitude over the last couple of weeks, and only Shane Farrell will know himself if this is true. He needs to look himself in the mirror, and don't lie to yourself. I've done it many, many times as when I was a younger pro, when I looked in the mirror, and it was very, very easy to lie to myself when things are going well. But I don't know how he's been training the last couple of weeks, but what I do know is he did let his team down. He did let the fans down, because like I say, there was 25 minutes to go and they were rolling the dice, bringing on being Sean Boyd, and they had to just contain Shamrock Rovers after that. So I get that people think it's a bit harsh, but with Damien Duff, I think you always know where you stand. He's very, very black and white, and I'm probably a little bit old school, but I like that. Even if you're in the manager's bad books, you know where you stand and you know how to get out of it. And I'm sure Shane Farrell is not on uncertain ground. He knows what he has to do to get back into Damien Duff's good books, and he has the talent to be able to do it.
So for anyone who was late to this, Shane Farrell was sent off after 12 minutes within 12 minutes of coming on in last night's game, and then Damien Duff gave an interview post-match and he was very critical of him. I thought it was just heat of the moment, but then he went on to speak to other medias and his newspaper huddle, and he went a little bit further in his criticism of Shane Farrell, saying things that he gets he's a fan favourite but he doesn't deserve to play. I used to laugh about his diet, that time has passed now. So it does sound like, as you said, Keith, that he was trying to send a message to him, maybe to try and spur him on. But if it doesn't work, there's a lot of reputational damage there as well.
There is, but it can all be repaired. He is a young pro. He's still only 23 years of age. So, you know, the fact that he's eating chicken fillet rolls and stuff like that, you know, you can probably laugh it off at a certain point. But it looks like Duffer's got to the point where he's looking at him and think, you need to start taking this seriously. And you know, it took me so long in my career to realise that, you know, it's football is not just, you can't just turn it on and off like a tap. It has to be an everyday thing. And if he's coming in and maybe thinking, well, I'll down tools on a Monday, I'll go back on a Tuesday and Thursday, that would be in the back of Damien Duff's head. And then when Shane Farrell comes on and gives a disappointing performance like he does, gets two silly yellow cards, it's just going to tot up in his head. But look, he's a very, very talented boy, and what he did last night was silly, but this is by no means the end of the road of Shane Farrell at Shelbourne. Like I say, he's a very, very talented boy. I've seen him do some brilliant things on the pitch, and he just needs to get his head down and train well. And I just hope he reacts in the right way, because you can get the bottom lip out, you can sulk, and you know your season will quickly be over. Or you can knuckle down and get into the gym and show Damien Duff that, you know, you want to be part of the Shelbourne team, because for me, this Shelbourne team is going in the right direction. I know that the last couple of weeks, the last couple of results haven't been good, but all in all, when you zoom out, Shelbourne are absolutely flying this season, and they've Europe to come, and they'd love Shane Farrell to be a part of that.
You get the feeling Damien Duff kind of said that almost in, you're wasting an opportunity, you need a rap on the knuckles, you need to focus yourself. That's the way I read it, Keith.
Yeah,
just
I think so.
Almost looking out for him.
I think it's more encouragement than anything. I know it doesn't sound like that in the media. It sounds like he's just being critical. But, you know, what managers used to say to me when they criticised me, it was always it's because we think you have something, Keith. It's not like if we thought we were flogging a dead horse here, we just wouldn't bother with you. The fact that Damien Duff is saying this stuff in the media, I know it doesn't reflect well on him, but the fact that he's saying it, Damien Duff believes that Shane Farrell can go and do something, whether that's in the Irish League, maybe even across the water. He has that amount of talent, but there's a human being, and a a lot of football is played in between the years, and if Shane Farrell is a little bit mentally weak and not living his life properly off the pitch, it will come back and get you. And this is a very, very experienced, a Centurion Irish international, played in World Cups, Champions League. If you're not going to listen to Damien Duff, who are you going to listen to?
Well, I think maybe he'll want people to, or people will want to will him on now, that we'll all be watching out, hoping that he responds to this criticism and that he has the career, that he fulfills his potential, that he's able to deliver what Damien Duff expects from him, because, as you said, he does have that potential there. So, Keith, what was the worst criticism you ever got?
Oh, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say it just yet, but we'd have to wait till after the watershed. But I've had it from plenty of managers, and like I say, when I feel like I've seen this situation where you get it in the media and you can react either way, and once or twice in my career I didn't react too well to it. And the reason you're getting criticised is because the managers want to poke you, they're poking the bear, so to speak. They want a good reaction out of you, and they don't want to see you, you know, get the bottom lip out and shy away from it. This is elite football. This is Premier League. This is the highest you can go in this country. So you're going to get criticised from time to time, and you have to develop a thick skin. And I think Shane Farrell will soon start to realise that.
Well, we all know him now.
We do.
Speaking of thick skins, both managers felt hard done by to get yellow cards. That's hardly surprising, isn't it?
No, well, I was over the other side of the pitch in the gantry, and I seen the two of them having a little bit of argy-bargy, and they're going at each other. Then all of a sudden it ended in a hug. It was a bit bizarre, but yeah, both of them ended up with a yellow card. But it was really feisty. The first 45 minutes was good. It was entertaining in terms of football. The second 45, the managers were at each other. There was a bit of needle on the pitch. Sean Boyd was lashing into people as well. It got a little bit physical. And I did like that side of it. I thought it was a proper Dublin derby. And very rarely will you hear me say that a nil-all draw was an entertaining one.
Yeah, well, the other good thing about Duff is that he is definitely raising the profile of the League of Ireland as well, because of his honest approach to interviews. It's brilliant copy. It's great to listen to. It's compelling. It's interesting, exciting, all of those sort of things.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you want. If you're a player in the dressing room, and you know, players aren't stupid. They know themselves if they've had a good game, a bad game, if they made a heap load of mistakes or not. And Damien Duff comes in and he generally just tells the truth in the media. And when you have a manager doing that, you think, well, he's clued in, he knows what he's doing, he knows what he's talking about, he understands the game. When you have managers coming out and say the total opposite of what's actually happening on the pitch, it can be very disillusioning. So I would prefer a manager like Damien Duff. You know where you stand. It's other managers where you can possibly be a little bit two-faced, tell you one thing but mean another, and tell you to do this and you'll be in the team. You don't quite get there. I think Shane Farrell knows where he stands, and I think everybody in that Shelbourne team knows where he stands, and I think that's the best place to be.
And we also know that when Damien Duff's wife is mad at him, she doesn't talk to him, because he said that in his interview as well. He said he didn't talk to the players.
Oh, that's most houses, Marie.
Yeah, you wouldn't be
that's
alone.
That's not just Damien Duff's house.
Right, before we move on from the League of Ireland, there's the new manager in town. Noel King was confirmed over the last couple of days, but he's been out speaking to the media. A very interesting appointment, Keith, and one that has split opinion. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely interested me. It's, you know, Noel King is, I don't think it was anybody was expecting that appointment to be made. It's definitely one that piques my interest. I'm thinking how he's going to set up. I remember his time with the Irish women, with the Irish underage men's teams as well. Very, very educated man. He's a good footballer man, and Dundalk needs something. You know, I spoke earlier about this, and I was saying that I feel Dundalk have the players to stay up. I went away, I looked over my homework, I did a little bit more, and the more I analyse it, the more I look at Dundalk and I look at the rest of the league, I think Dundalk are in big, big trouble. They seem to be going in the wrong direction, and sometimes a new manager can come in and completely turn around the ship, but it's easier said than done. It really is. And if Noel King gets a better tune out of Dundalk squad, he will have done really, really well, because at the minute they don't look good. No wins, and you know, performance wise hasn't been great either. A lot of the players look like they've hit a brick wall, and I wouldn't say they've down tools, but it's just not happening for them whatsoever. So they need something, and they need it quick.
Well, Noel King also spoke to Tony O'Donoghue today.
I got a call from America, from Brian Ains' call. He explained to me what the situation was, and he had asked me would I be interested. So obviously I was more than interested, even though it was a surprise. And obviously I had to check again with the family and check everybody was okay with that. And about 2 seconds later I said, that's brilliant, let's go for it.
Now, obviously Dundalk, bottom of the table, it's quite the challenge. I mean, how soon do you expect to turn this around?
You can only take it in the old-fashioned cliche, one match at a time. That's what you have to be realistic about. There's 3 points up for grabs for every game. and plenty of time left to turn it around. And the team, from what I can see, looks well capable of doing it.
There's a lot of work being done here already. You're not going to come in and uproot the good stuff that's been done. So you have to take a bit of time, see what's required, see where the issues are, where the problems are, if there are problems, and take it from there.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We are turning our attention to rugby now, and I'm delighted to say that one of my favourite sports people ever is on the line. Am I allowed to say that? Can I repeat?
You are. Okay. Definitely.
Well, it's Lindsay Pete. How are you, Lindsay?
Hi, Marie. How are you? How's
it? Delighted to have you on, and for good reason too, because this weekend your Railway Union team are going to play in the Women's Aerial Final against UL Bose in the Aviva, and it's going to be your very first time playing there. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, we started off this call well. I'll take favourite athlete, and the fact now that we're backed up with going to see Aviva, it's an exciting week, I have to say, and it's an absolute privilege for the club to be involved with one of the first two women's teams to actually play in the Aviva and really hopefully turn a corner with women's rugby in this country. I think there's only one other women's team who've played there at this level, and it was the Irish women's team, and if memory serves me right, it was back in 2014, maybe early 15, but it was definitely, we're looking at 10 years and they haven't played there since. So just the trajectory of women's rugby and to be up there, and I suppose I've played international, I've been very, very privileged, so it's such an exciting time. But for the grassroots players or those young players coming up who are really grafting and trying to make a name, and to be now on that stage in the Aviva Stadium, the iconic stadium that it is, and the history steeped in its grounds as regards rugby and soccer, and to get to play there, I think is really exciting for that generation coming up.
Lindsay, it's a great weekend. I mean, both, it's a double header, the Energy All-Ireland League final between the men and the women. They're both on 1:45, your first up, 4 o'clock is the men's game. It's a good idea. Bunch them together, Saturday, the Aviva. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and it's they're both live, obviously, on TG Car for anybody who can't get themselves down to Aviva. But I really just, you know, really putting out a plea that, you know, if anybody is around, whether you're involved or you're at the game or you're not involved with the clubs that are there on the day directly, just, you know, if you're free time, you want to come support, we'd love it. But if not, turn on TG Car and try and, support us that way if you can, because I suppose... you know, we were always pushing it. We're kind of a club at the minute in transition. So to get it told me at the start of the season we were going to make a final, I would have taken your hand off with the fact then. When it was announced, I actually genuinely, without sounding soppy, I actually cried. And I'm not the only player involved in the club. And I'm sure I spoke for those who were, you know, looking to book the final place throughout different teams who were in the running throughout the season. But it was an iconic moment. So... yeah, and to play there with the men's who, I am used to watching the likes of Clontarf and Terenure and, you know, the big clubs that are successful over the last couple of years playing in the finals in the Aviva for the men's. You want to support them and you're looking forward to the match. But as a player, for me especially, I can only speak for myself, but there was a slight bit of jealousy and envy. And now that I'm there, I don't want to be overcome with the emotion, but I am emotional about it, and I know I'm not the only player, and it's going to be a great day. It really is. I hope it's just going to be the spectacle that it can be.
Well, you haven't become Marie Crowe's favourite athlete because you're a good loser. I guarantee you that one. So versus Railway Union, you lost by 3 points when you went to Limerick, but when you got them back, you hammered them. On form, are you confident?
I'm probably, if I'm honest, I expected a tight game when we had them at home, but Bose are they're a historic club, but they would have had the likes of Fiona Coughlin, Lynn Cantwell, a lot of famous names, Joy Neville, come through that jersey, and that's only naming past players. I can go on and name the likes of Chloe Pearce, Nicole Cronin, Kira Griffin, who have all played presently. So they come with, you know, probably as the title favourites coming into Sunday. We're slight underdogs, and we're happy with that. You know, we're very happy with the performance we put in at home. I'm very, very surprised at the results, but I'm confident that we can definitely compete with them. And as I said, I think, you know, the season that they've had, they've been exemplary. We're the only team to have beaten them. They probably will be pretty peed off that they didn't come with a, you know, a clear, you know, all winning season for themselves. They were capable of it, so they probably will come, you know, wanting to put things right on Sunday. So we're very wary of the threat they bring, but we know we have to bring our A game, and everyone has to bring their A game individually and collectively if we, you know, want to get a, bring that trophy home.
It's amazing how people go back to talking the opposition up when they get into something like this. Everyone else is going away. And I mean, 10-7 you lost when you had to go to UL. 43-22 you beat them when you had them at home. Come on, Lindsay, be a bit more bullish.
Listen, I haven't learned how to play these mind games, Ruby, for no reason, so I'm not going to let you push me into something now I don't want to say. I think that word now, it begins with R and ends in T, and if I don't have a bit of respect for the opposition that's coming up, I tell you what, we'll be in for a hiding on Sunday. But yeah, as I said, I'm going to stick with it. I do think there's some absolutely phenomenal athletes in the squad who are very young. If you keep an eye on Faith Huawei, who's playing our second row, I don't know whether she's starting, she hasn't named the team, but she's been starting all year, and I tell you, she's just one of the athletes. Keelan Brady, Emily Gavin has come from regions. We've Nikki Coughey, their experience, Katie O'Dwyer, ex-international, Niamh Byrne, our captain. I mean, I'm only naming but a few who are there. Ava Ryder, Amy Clark. I wanted to call her Browse there. Browse from Dunnycarney, only down the road from me, so a good Northsider. So, look, I'm only naming a few of a multi-talented team that I play within. So I know what we can bring on our day, but there's a lot of variables with a young team, the occasion. I just hope that the Aviva, the enormity of the occasion that it is, I just hope we're not lost in it. And I said that we go out and play. If we play to 80-90% of what we showed up playing in the league game a couple of weeks ago, we will absolutely be in with a winning chance of this. But yeah, everything has to fall into place for us, and I'm looking forward to that. I really am looking forward to just getting out there playing. I'm very proud jersey, the Railway Union crest over my chest, and yeah, just hopefully celebrating a good result on Sunday with these players. But we've a lot to get through before we see the outcome of it.
So what position are you playing now, Lindsay?
Well, I have been playing number 8 most of the season, but...
So you've moved from the front row to number 8. That doesn't usually happen now. It's usually the other way around, isn't it, where people move from... Well, definitely in GA and soccer, you move back the field.
Well, I told you we're a team in transition, so I don't know whether we're demoted or they're really stuck that I get to go in number 8. But I have to say, I'm absolutely loving it. I'm loving the freedom. I'm not going to say I'm playing well there, but look, I've been getting the nod most of the season, so I'm hoping that as long as I'm starting or I'm included in the 23 on Sunday, I'll be very, very happy, because I think this will be the tough part of the season. You know, we've tried to get everyone in. It's been tough trying to juggle when the lads have been out with Celtic Challenge or whether they've been out with Ireland. Been very hard to keep people motivated when you're struggling with numbers, but you know, we've got here now and that's all in the past, so we've a full complement, but he can only pick 23, and that's going to be the hard bit for Stephen and the management team. So, but it's a squad effort and everyone has contributed to us getting here, and everyone will hopefully celebrate if we're successful on Sunday.
We'll lose it all. You have to celebrate occasions like that. But Lindsay, looking at, you said pairs away with Ireland as well, looking at the women's Six Nations, obviously a good win for Ireland against Wales. You had last weekend Scotland coming up. How do you feel it's gone for them?
Joe, I've been very positive. I was at the Italy game. I obviously watched the France who was away. I didn't get to see it. I was away with my son in Legoland the weekend, so I got to see a good bit of the match. And Ruby, I'm sure you've ran races now in your own career that it is or against opposition, and it's just a perfect race that everything fell into place. And by God, did England, they were like a well-oiled machine. They were sublime in everything they did. And I think, unfortunately, then on the other side, Ireland probably had a little bit of an off day, whether they were shell-shocked for the occasion, whether they just weren't ready to start. But I think it's just a slight blip as to where we are. They were absolutely excellent against Wales. They absolutely were relentless. Probably disappointed about not getting over the line against Italy, but they rectified that against Wales. So I think there's a huge improvement, and I can feel the buzz off them. There's definitely a different energy off them than was previously there. So Scott has definitely done something. I know they have this they get a lot of, I think it's called a green wave, you know, family and friends are there after games, and they're very, very tight. So it's definitely a good atmosphere in there. It's a good culture, and I think they're thriving in there. I can see even a difference in Dorothy Wall in how she's doing her media, how she's playing, how she's stepping up and doing leader, her dominant tackles, the work rate of everyone. I love the clarity. There's huge clarity there that wasn't there before, and I know they missed over 60 tackles against England, but power and pace brings, it puts you under different pressure, and I think it just unearthed probably where we really are at in our development. So you're talking about one of the top, well, they're sitting pretty in the world rankings now as number one. So it just kind of unearthed where the gap is at. So where we are with the rest of the home nations, I think we're in a good spot. If we could get a win against Scotland now in Kingspan on Saturday, I think it would be an absolutely, a really, really good return. I would have said the best we could have hoped for was wins against Scotland, Wales and Italy. And after that, if we could get performances against the top two, it would be a really good campaign. Obviously, there's World Cup qualification on the line, I think, on Saturday. But there's always opportunity. So we're obviously wanting good performances, good test matches, develop our players. And then obviously we're aiming to make sure we're qualified as one of those 16 teams going to England in 2025 for the World Cup. So I'm very impressed with them right now. There's obviously a lot of work to do. They're a very young team. I still think we need depth, but we will get there. So I think we're on a good trajectory.
Lindsay, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're training tonight, so enjoy that and best of luck at the weekend. Sunday at 1:45, TG Cahir, if you can't get to the Aviva Stadium. Looking forward to seeing it, and I hope it goes the way that you want it to. Enjoy the experience as well, because you definitely deserve to be there.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, lads. Have a good
best
week.
Best of luck.
Mind yourselves. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Ruby. See you. Bye-bye.
So, we mentioned that there's a huge game for the Ireland women coming up at the weekend. And earlier today, Michael Corcoran spoke to the Ireland manager, Scott Beamont.
We didn't get too high after Wales. We understood that it was a good, confident performance, but we knew that there was bits where we left points out there. The girls took the learnings from that. So we'd entered the competition with France, Italy, Wales, and had built momentum each week. You're having a game, an occasion against the world's number one team, in an environment that they're probably leading the world in at the moment in terms of putting on a standalone occasion. So in terms of the age profile, the experience profile of the players, being in and around that will be invaluable for them in the future. It was what it was on the weekend. Momentum goes away and it ends up looking a little bit like chasing shadows. But we understand where that sits in the run of momentum of what had happened before that. So, yeah, look, we've reviewed it pretty honestly, but I think we can call it a blip. The competition has panned out probably as the Six Nations wanted it, where you've got a top two who are gunning for the title and you've got four of us that anybody can pretty much finish anywhere. We've took our learnings, we're pretty confident in our own ability and our training identity and how we'll put it out there. Now we've just got to go and do it.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Before we move on to the football, if anyone is just tuning in, we were speaking to Lindsay Peat, the former Ireland rugby player. She also played international basketball and soccer and won an All-Ireland with Dublin and is going to play in the Aviva Stadium for the very first time this weekend. She's 42, I think, Ruby. How impressive is that?
Incredibly impressive to keep playing at that level. But do you know about her? She absolutely loves what she's doing. Yeah. Sports her life. And I can see why you said she's your favourite sports person.
And even to move to the number eight, like... So she's
from the front row, but football and brain as well, and a basketball brain. Mm. I'd say she's moved there for her tactical nous as much as anything else.
I've seen her recently, though. She's in really good shape.
Have you?
She's been hitting the gym big time. Keith Tracy, early 40s, still playing.
Unbelievable, yeah. I can see that. No, my body's absolutely knackered. It's unbelievable. Anybody who's been in a sport is such a rough sport as well, like rugby, to have that longevity, it's mind-boggling to me. It really is.
Right, well, we'll be keeping an eye on how she gets on. Over the weekend, we're going to turn our attention to football now, and Fergal Brennan joins us on the line to talk all things European football and the Premier League and everything else that's going on. Ruby?
What age is Paolo Maldini, Fergal, when he was playing for AC Milan?
I think, did he make it up to 40, Paolo?
I think he did.
I think he went just over 40 or 41, I think.
Rolls Royce.
Just when you said that, came into my head, Marie. Sorry, on you go.
We're all hoping we'll be still able to walk around that age. Fergal, do we have a potential leading candidate for Liverpool? Is this a true story? RNA Slot, Feyenoord's manager?
It's gathered a huge amount of momentum since lunchtime, realistically, and it kind of shows, particularly in the age of social media, how fast these things can move. Ruben Amorim, the Sporting Lisbon manager, who was rumoured to be the red-hot favourite last week, has been targeted by West Ham. There's reports that they're already in talks with him, and he's potentially considering that over Liverpool as a slightly more sensible career move on his part. It's not necessarily a swipe at Liverpool. I think we're seeing this increasingly with managers. We've obviously seen it with Xabi Alonso before, that they're looking at the position that their career is in. Arne Slot from Feyenoord, he won the league title with them last year. He's won one in three seasons. He's going to get squeezed out of it this time around by PSV Eindhoven. It's a very difficult one, I'll be very honest, because perceptions are very important in football, and I think as this news has broken, a lot of Liverpool fans will be relatively underwhelmed. There's a bit of justification in that, but I think a lot of that comes out of the fact that he's replacing the most successful manager they've had in a generation. There's not a great deal of options at the moment. I was just thinking about this afternoon. If they were to hire from within the Premier League, it's only really Roberto De Zerbi at Brighton that's a possible candidate. Every other manager is well in situ where they are, or not at the level that Liverpool would want. And then across Europe, obviously there's been the situation already with Alonso. There's one or two other managers dotted around, but there's not a great deal of choice. So I can see why Liverpool fans would be a bit underwhelmed, because he's perceived as a bit of a wild card, bit of an unknown candidate, because he's coming from the Netherlands, which is a league that's not watched as much or covered as much. We just kind of have to see how it goes for the next few weeks, but it is a serious rumour. It's not just a gossip page thing. They are genuinely interested in him. He is the front runner as it stands, because Alonso has said no, and Amorim for now doesn't look as if he's an option.
Keith, is it slightly a poison chalice trying to follow Jurgen Klopp?
I think so. I have to be honest. I see a lull coming for Liverpool when Jurgen Klopp leaves. I know he hasn't had the same longevity as an Arsene Wenger or a Sir Alex Ferguson, but I think he's had just as much influence on Liverpool, and to get them play the way they're playing now. And I just feel it's not going to end well. You know, you see the last couple of weeks, Liverpool, in terms of their walk rate, in terms of getting around the pitch, it's only come down probably 1-2% at most, and you see the difference in that team. And I just feel it's coming. I think there's going to be a little bit of a lull. The Liverpool fans will want to win the same way that Klopp wins, and I think any manager that comes in, I honestly think the next manager that comes in the Liverpool door will be out the door by Christmas. And I think that's why Xabi Alonso was weighed up this situation and thought, I don't think so. I think I see an iceberg coming at Liverpool, and there's no point in me jumping for that one.
He wasn't going to be standing in the way. Unai Emery has extended his contract with Villa, though. That's a good call for them.
Excellent call. He's playing some brilliant stuff. You know, it's not just some of the players he's brought in. You know, Ollie Watkins as well. Some of the players within the dressing room that he's made an awful lot better. And you know, the one thing I like about Unai Emery's team is when they don't have the ball, they drop into a 4-4-2. And I know I keep saying it, but I think it's just refreshing to see a manager leave two lads up the top of the pitch and think, okay, if you want to try and pick holes in our defence, no problem, but when we win it, we have an awful big threat up the top of the pitch. And it's been outstanding to watch, and I think Villa are right on the cusp now of becoming an elite club in England. I know Villa fans would be screaming saying we're a huge club, but I mean in terms of actually being in Europe and being able to compete in Europe, I think they're right on the cusp of doing that. But Unai Emery is the glue that's holding it all together at the minute. He's been absolutely outstanding for them.
Yeah, Villa are having an incredible year. Fergal, one that caught my eye on the news today was Nottingham Forest are going to be offered a chance to privately hear VAR audio from three penalty claims in the match with Everton last Sunday. A, what will that conclude? And B, could Forest find themselves in hot water, or will the FA just walk away from this?
It's a very difficult situation for the FA and for the Premier League to balance, because on the back of, if you go back to the start of the season when they publicly released the audio from the Tottenham-Liverpool game, it was a real embarrassment for them, because it highlighted the mistake and the incompetence of the officials at that time. By letting Forest listen to this privately, I don't think they're going to reduce the frustration from the Nottingham Forest perspective, unless there's something really, really conclusive in it that no one else can get a grasp on based on the weekend's action. I think Forest are going to be even more annoyed. I don't think they've necessarily dropped themselves in hot water because they haven't overstepped the mark. It's not been a case where the manager has come out into a press conference and been shouting and raving and criticising referees and calling the game into disrepute or players. It's the club have done it very officially. They released a statement. They requested the information. They requested the Premier League to be honest with them, the PGMOL, which deals with match officials and referees. Ultimately, I just don't see how Nottingham Forest don't hear this tonight or tomorrow and then come back to the Premier League and say, there's evidence of a mistake here. What are you going to do about it? But because the game is gone and there's no chance of a replay, that's been mooted by a couple of people. That's not going to happen. I just think it will only deepen Forest's frustration further. If they released it publicly, then Forest will be able to say, we've been wronged and now everybody can see it. There's no room for any doubt, as was the case with Liverpool and Tottenham back in, I think it was late September-ish. That's not going to be the case this time round. Forest are just going to be left even more frustrated and they're in big trouble in terms of Premier League relegation.
Yeah, it's a sticky situation for them. I just thought with their social media page, that's a tie to them, and the accusation in that was kind of leading.
It was, but I think they were so angry by the decisions. Anyone that watched the game, or even if they just watched the highlights, one penalty, two penalties can be missed during a game. There can be a kind of toss of a coin and you kind of throw your hands up and you say, oh, we'll get the next one. There's three really strong candidates for a spot kick, particularly for me, the last one with Ashley Young and Callum Hudson-Odoi. And the fact that the referee just doesn't really pay it any regard, I think that maybe, as you say, fed into the wording of that statement. But they did try to play it quite carefully and just say that they disagreed with it and they wanted things to be looked into. In regards to their comments before the game about the fourth official being a Luton Town fan, that's a question that the Premier League need to ask, and obviously the vetting of officials and their allegiances and whether that is taken into serious account before they're picked for certain matches. Unfortunately, Forest won't have a grounding on that. That will be something made between the Premier League and the PGMOL.
Keith, was football better when you played and we didn't have VAR and we didn't have all these avenues for complaining?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, at least when I played, you could go home, you could give out about the referee missing it and you could move on. But with so many camera angles and all this VAR and we just assumed that we're going to get the right outcome all the time. And look, I have to be honest, I watched the game and I did think the first two Nottingham Forest penalties were a little bit weak. We could go down the road of seeing them given, but there's no point in continuously giving penalties that aren't penalties just because we did it a month ago or 2 months ago. The third one for me is the one that I have a bit of an issue with. I do think that one's a penalty, but Nottingham Forest are really, really having a right moan up here for me over one penalty decision that they didn't get. The other two, you know, you can, as I say, you can go down the road of we've seen them given, but they're not penalties for me. They've been really, really soft. So there's one penalty that they should have got that they didn't get, but they still lost the game 2-0. They didn't turn up, and, you know, the manager wants to spin this narrative that the referee did this and VAR did that. The referee gave the decisions on the pitch. VAR backed up the referee's decision. VAR didn't get involved and say, that's not a penalty, overrule it. The referee didn't give the penalty on the pitch, and VAR agreed with him. So it wasn't down to the VAR decision. It was the referee's original decision that VAR stuck with.
So what if it happened in Arsenal and Chelsea tonight and Arsenal ended up losing? Would it be a different story then? Would you be saying, just get on with it?
No, well, it'll put me out of my misery because I still have this little small bit of hope that Arsenal might be able to do something. But look, I do think these things, over the course of a season, they generally will go 50-50 for you. Look, I know you could initially Wolves pops into my mind. I know Wolves have been extremely hard done by with VAR this season. And again, when we have all these camera angles and all these this different technology and we're still not getting the right results, it's just mind-boggling. But it was better for me when we just let the referee go on with it and we took his opinion on it and we moved on from there.
Fergal, that is a big game in the Premier League tonight. Chelsea unbeaten in the last Premier League games and Arsenal have to win.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. Manchester City obviously are not playing until Thursday, so they've got a bit of catching up to do. If Arsenal do get the win tonight, they'll go 3 points clear. And it will, despite the experience and the muscle memory that Man City do have, it will ramp up that pressure on them just a little bit more. But there's nothing less than a win will do for Arsenal. Trent Alexander-Arnold, after the Liverpool-Fulham game at the weekend, he effectively said it for Liverpool and Arsenal. They need to win every game between now and the end of the season and hope that something happens from the Manchester City perspective, because City do have that ability that, that Liverpool and Arsenal don't, where they can just win 10 plus, 10, 15 games on the run and make sure they get it done. So it, it has to be a win for Arsenal tonight. And I think they will get it. Chelsea, despite the fact that home form has been a bit better of late, they're still very up and down. Mauricio Pochettino said yesterday that Cole Palmer, who's been brilliant for them, is unwell, so it's not certain if he plays. And effectively, he's been dragging them along for probably the last 2 months, his goals and his performances. If he plays, he's probably not going to be 100%. If he doesn't play, I think they're in big trouble, because Arsenal, fair play to them, they bounced back against Wolves at the weekend from losing to Bayern Munich. Arteta will have them fired up. They know that they just have to go out, win every game, and hope that somebody trips City over. And I still think there will be a twist or two between now and the end of May. There's still quite a bit of football to play, and there's obviously moving dynamics, because some teams are playing before others, and then there's points to be made up, and the top of the table will change hands a few times.
Keith, do you think one of those twists will come tonight?
Possibly, yeah. This Chelsea team is quite unique in the fact that they're very hard to know what you're going to get. They're so inconsistent, and the first stat that jumps out to me is they're unbeaten in the last 8 games, but they've had draws with Burnley in there, a draw with Sheffield United in there, they've gone and beat Manchester United, but they hammered Everton as well in there 6-0. So you just really don't know what you're going to get. And you look at the profile of players they have. Mudrick's 23, Madueke was 22, Jackson is 22, Casado is 22, Fernandez is 23, and Palmer is 21. So with that, you're going to get that little bit of inconsistency, but they've conceded 52 goals from 31 games, and that's just not a defence that's going to get you up the right end of the league. So there's an awful lot of improvements to be made, and I do think Pochettino was getting Chelsea going in the right direction, but I just think it's going to be two steps forward, one step back, and it's going to be like that until the end of the season. But there's a whole host of so many people in that dressing room. It maybe needs, I wouldn't say cleared out, but he needs to be a lot more selective in who he wants in the dressing room, because there's so many big egos in the dressing room. When there's one or two not playing, it's not a good place to be. It can spread around. So look, I think with Palmer missing today for Chelsea, I believe he's ill, with his 20 goals and 9 assists so far in the Premier League, I think that leans it towards Arsenal. But this Chelsea team is very, very capable of turning up and clicking and beating anybody on the day, but also very capable of losing to anybody.
Yeah, well, sorting out those 9 and 10 year contracts in Chelsea would be the biggest problem Pochettino has. But look at the Championship, Fergal. Big game there tonight as well. Leicester are on top. They play Southampton in 4th place. And this is a huge game for Leicester.
It is. They've made a real mess of getting over the line in terms of getting back into the Premier League. If you go back to the middle of January, they were flying. They had a lead of double figures. They were gone. It just looked a formality. They have steadied a wee bit in the last couple of weeks. I think they've won 3 in the last 5. There is experience in there. The likes of Jamie Vardy, Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, who's been really good for them this season. In defence, they've got Vestergaard, Valtface, players that last season in the Premier League were maybe found out in terms of their level, but they've been really capable operators for them in the Championship. They just look like they've just about done enough to get there, whether it'll be Ipswich or Leeds who goes up with them. That's still to be decided. I think if they win tonight, it's effectively done. And then it'll be a real battle between Leeds and Ipswich. Leeds won last night at Middlesbrough. Neither of them want to drop down into the playoff, because I'm not sure of the maths of it, but I don't know how kind it is if you've been battling for automatic all season and then you drop down and you've got a team that was maybe out of the playoff picture and just comes in on a roll of form, gets 6th place and just needs to win a couple of matches to get into the Premier League. That can be really difficult to kind of rail against. So Leicester for me will go up. I'd probably tip for Leeds to go behind them, just because of that bit more experience that they've got from Ipswich. Southampton are safe for a playoff spot. It's not irrelevant what result they get tonight, but they know that they're over that particular line. For them, it's about getting the right opponent, whether that's if they finish 3rd or 4th. And they will be in the mix to get promoted. I kind of looking at form, you'd be very, very hard pressed to look past them, because I do think they've got a bit more than the other teams in and around them.
Keith, what do you reckon? They'll go up?
I think Leicester will go up. Yeah, I would be fairly similar. Leicester will go up. I'd like to see probably, you know, a lot of Irish fans, a lot of Leeds fans in Ireland, but I'd like Ipswich to do it. I think they've been there or thereabouts, and I remember when I was growing up watching Ipswich in the Premier League. I remember watching Leeds as well. So Yeah, I think Ipswich might just be able to nick leads, and momentum is a big thing at this part of the season. If you've been forced a second all season, all of a sudden you drop into third and you're into the playoffs, it can feel like a real sucker punch. So I'm not too sure, but I love the Championship. I spent most of my career down there, and you just never know who's going to be top, who's going to be bottom. There's drama all over the league, and very little respect, which I love. Everybody goes for everybody's throats when they play, which is always exciting and brilliant to watch.
And Fergal, finally, before we go, Inter Milan won the Scudetto last night when they beat AC Milan, but this has been some job from Simone Inzaghi. When you look at the financial restraints on Inter, all the players they had to sell to win the way they've won, 79 goals in 33 games, and they've only conceded 18. Incredible stuff.
Absolutely brilliant. And they've nudged ahead of Inter now in terms of all-time wins, which is always a good one to have over your rivals. He's one of the best managers in European football for me. Even if you think back to last season with the Champions League final, they took Man City very, very close. Anyone that thinks back to that game, the Lukaku miss, the fact that they could have pushed them, maybe beat them, maybe even gone to extra time, I think he's a fantastic manager. And as you say, he's not had an easy time. He's had to sell players, he's had to balance a lot of things at the club, but he's done a really good job with experienced players that a lot of people might have forgotten about. Calhanoglu, Mkhitaryan, who's obviously ex-Manchester United, he's got a bit of life out of them, and he's brought through a couple of young players to supplement that. I think he's a fantastic manager. I don't think he's going to be leaving this summer, if that's what anyone's thinking, but I think the next time a big job comes up, if his stock is still really, really high, and that's no disrespect to Inter Milan, but a big job in England or Spain comes up and he's still at this level, I absolutely think he should be mentioned in the conversation, because I think he's a brilliant manager.
It most certainly reads that way. Fergal Brennan, thanks a million. Keith Tracy, thank you. We've got a quick break to take.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back. We are turning our attention to racing. We did get a little bit of an insight into the Jockeys Championship, how it's playing out between Paul Townend and Jack Kennedy. And I have to say, Ruby, you built it up really well for us. You might as well predict it for me now, since you have me invested.
Oh, well, Jack went another one in front today. He got a winner in Tipperary. He won the second race down there for Paul Power. So he stretched his lead to 6 over Paul Townend. And there's only Bellistown tomorrow, Wexford on Thursday, Downpatrick Friday, and then you're into the final 5 days in Punchestown Marie. But look, Paul is in Perth tomorrow riding for Willie Mullins. He's 4 rides there, whereas Jack has 5 in Bellistown. So if you can poach another one, that puts him 7 in front before they both pitch up in Wexford on Thursday, where Paul has 5 and or Paul has 2 and Jack has 5 rides. So you could just see Jack with Downpatrick as well would be a happy hunting ground for Gordon Elliott. You can see him getting to Punchestown the 7 or 8 in front that he needs to be, because when you get to Punchestown is Willie Mullins and Paul Townend. That's where they have had a bean. Paul rode 11 winners there last year. I mean, you look through what Jack Kennedy's going to ride in Punchestown. He obviously has Tehupu in the Ladbrokes Stayers Hurdle. He'll have Starter Story in the Shannon Group Novice Hurdle. They'd be his two bankers. But on the flip side, Paul would have Ballyburn in the Alana Holmes Novices Hurdle, Gallop in the Champ in the Ladbrokes Gold Cup, Gaelic Warrior in the Barberstown Castle Novice Chase, Stateman in the Boodles Champion Hurdle, Lossiemouth in the Coolmore Irish EBF Mayor's Champion Hurdle. Paul's bankers versus Jack's would be much bigger at Punchestown. So if Jack can get there 7 or 8 in front, he puts Paul under pressure, but that'd be the kind of cushion he needs.
Is it a thing that jockeys talk about?
It's not, and I tell you why. In a jockey's world, you just hope that you get to the end of the season in one piece. So you're like, one fall and this is over as such. And that's Jack Kennedy knows. So that's the way it works in racing. So jockeys are, I wouldn't say superstitious, but they never tempt fate. So you never look that far ahead. Can I be champion jockey? Of course, both would like to be champion jockey and both want to be champion jockey. But either way, they'll size up their seasons. Paul's had an incredible season, but so too has Jack. I mean, it's the first time that I can remember in the last 3 or 4 years that he has lasted through a whole season. He's only 25, but like from the time he's been 18, he's had broken season after broken season and achieved so much. They are two wonderful riders, but to Jack to come back in late June last year, so he missed the first month of the season, came back in late June to be leading. And even the score he's on 121, Paul Townend's on 115. Paul has won the last 5, but his best season has been 109. He's better than that and he's still behind. Like, they're riding phenomenal winners, the two of them, and it adds an extra bit of spice to what'll be a great week in Punchestown.
Does it get strategic, or like even Paul going off to Perth, does that come into play at all?
Paul didn't have too much in Bellistown, so he had four rides in Perth, and obviously Willie is chasing the Trainers' Championship in the UK, so he went there. But Paul is coming home on Thursday to ride at Wexford, and Friday, depending on what Willie has in Downpatrick, Paul could be going back to Perth and then down to Sandown. So, it does. You try your best, but I mean, you can't just imagine uprights. I mean, and all of Paul's wins this season have come for Willie. He hasn't had that many outside rides, whereas Jack has had a few more, so he's picking up the outside rides that maybe Paul isn't.
Just some breaking news before we finish up in the SM6 200 metre individual medley SM6 final at the European Para Swimming Championships. Ireland's Nicole Turner has just won bronze, which is absolutely brilliant for her. So Ruby, just on punches, Ted, then what's the big thing to look forward to?
I think it'll be a great race, Marie. I mean, you're going to have Gallop in the champ and fast or slow, a rematch of last year's race. Obviously, with Willie going for the championship, you probably won't have Il Fallibiolo on Tuesday, but you'll have most of the horses that dominated the Cheltenham Festival. They'll all be in Punchestown. Like I said, Stellar Story, Ballyburn, Slade's Deal, Henry the Bromheads, maybe Brighter Days Ahead in Irish Point. You're just going to have great racing from Tuesday all the way to Saturday. And if the sun keeps shining, Marie, I was over there today, it'll be brilliant crack.
I was about to say that, all right. It's everything is better when the sun is shining, although maybe not for jockeys because the ground is harder.
No, not for jump jockeys. I used to hate the sunshine. Now I love it.
Good to hear. Okay, well, that is it. That is our lot for today. Shane will be in tomorrow and he'll have his usual fare of the ladies' football and the camogie and plenty more as well. So do tune in. Betty De Silva is up next.